I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Kraft.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
Dicker, Fontaine, Coyle up front for Minnesota. Spurgeon and Dumba. Here's Dumba. And he fanned on it. Fontaine in the corner. Zucker scores! Scandella in for Minnesota. Scandella spins and goes off the post.
That might be it. You might have called it a goal.
Granlund wins the draw for Minnesota. Commonville scores! Stewart has it to Zucker. Empty net for Nashville. Zucker scores! And Minnesota has a 2-goal.
And an opportunity now to take third place in the Central Division if things fall into place for the Minnesota Wild. This is the On the Ice radio show. Good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's having a glorious Saturday afternoon. It's almost short weather. Our producer, David Helmer, is rocking them right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I've got the shades on.
Why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. How about you? Are you wearing shades in St. Louis, Chad Graff? Good morning to you.
No. I didn't realize I was missing such beautiful weather out there. It's a little windy. It's not bad, but I wouldn't quite say I'm in shorts for short weather just yet.
It is perfect baseball weather today. Going to be about 68, 69 degrees. When the sun is out and there's no wind, it's perfect. So hopefully some of that goodwill will be here when you get back to the Twin Cities for the rest of your weekend. But what a night in Nashville. I mean, the storylines were aplenty, and this is a team that is clearly proving that it doesn't matter what the situation is. Well-earned 100-point season, which is one heck of a feat in this league, especially in the grisly Central Division of the National Hockey League.
Well, it's kind of funny. So they go into that game. They don't play Devan Dubnyk for the first time after he had made 38 straight starts. They don't play Zach Parise. They don't play Thomas Vanek. They don't play Nino Niederreiter. Those are their three top goal scorers. And then they go into Nashville, a team that's going to have home ice because they've been one of the best teams in the NHL all season, even if they faltered a little bit of late. And they go into Nashville and win 4-2. It was just a very good win for the Wild, and I think it largely showed that this is a team that, you know, when it plays its structure, it can sort of play with anybody regardless of who's playing in the lineup. And I think the other big takeaway was Darcy Kuemper goes into that game. Darcy Kuemper hadn't started a game since January 6th because of the great run that Devan Dubnyk was on, and he goes into that game and lets up 2 goals in the first 10 minutes. Things are looking dreary. There was rust for sure. I think that everybody, you know, sort of after 10 minutes was thinking, holy smokes, here we go. This could be like a 7-1 game. And then he stops every shot after that, 29 saves in total, and has a very good day for Darcy Kuemper.
Well, obviously, if you haven't played since January 6th, I think it's going to be a little tough to get acclimated to the speed and the screens and the bodies and the types of goals that were let in. But that forward in the early going by Forsberg was one of those, oh, here we go again. Leakey kind of, you know, gets through type of deal. Looked exactly like what we were seeing leading up to it. And then there was the shot from the point, which was a little bit, well, there's a screen, didn't see it, whatever. But it's the fact is, the result is it's 2-0 at that time, and you said, here we go again, but the team responded. He responded. He played much better. You know, and I don't think Darcy Kuemper or Nicholas Backstrom ever really forgot how to play goal. I think that's a good thing, and it's good to see a guy was rewarded for coming out to the rink every day, just knowing that, you know, he's going to every other day be dressing up as a backup, not even being the option as a starter. So that was a great story there. But the first thing that you touched on, I think, even more important and relevant. And when it does come to the postseason, remember Matt Cook's suspension last year. They had to work their way through that. They had to work through injuries. And, you know, it seems like the game gets faster, stronger, and the need for depth becomes even more amplified in the postseason. And what we saw were a bunch of players that were able to come out of the injury shelf, some healthy scratches, whatever it may be, from Bergenheim on down. Matt Cook jumps back into the lineup. And one of the things Mike Yeo talked about was that very depth and the options he has with this team.
That's big. I would also say the guys that we brought into the lineup, that's a good sign when you talk about the depth and the way that those guys did what they're, you know, we were expecting them to play, and that's kind of it almost shows us what they can do, and they all made a statement for themselves tonight, and certainly got some tough decisions ahead.
From a club perspective, you know, I mean, how hard is it to be one of those fringe guys and, you know, your competitor, you want to play, but know, Chad, that maybe you're not going to play? I mean, are you getting a feel that this is an all-in situation with this group?
Absolutely. I mean, guys like Matt Cook know that after he's been out for a while. Guys like Ryan Carter, even Kyle Brodziak, who's been very good and has been playing every day, knows that if his game slips a little bit come playoff time, there are lots of guys that can replace him. And that was one of the things that, you know, I was just talking to Coach Mike Yeo about yesterday. When you look back to the playoffs 2 years ago, their first playoff series in 5 years, they played the Chicago Blackhawks. Basically, they lost in five games. Jonathan Toews, his line spent the whole time shutting down the Mikko Koivu, Zach Parise, and I think Charlie Coyle was the other person on that line. They shut down that line. It was the Wild's top line, and then the Blackhawks just dismantled the Wild because they have more depth. They could rely on their second line to beat them, their third line to beat them, their fourth line to beat them. That's no longer the case, and I think that's the biggest difference for the Wild. And the other thing Yeo talked about was experience when we talked about depth, because now players know the playoff. They know what it's like to win a playoff series. But you really can't underestimate how big it is to have this depth, to be able to open a playoff series without a guy like Matt Cook in game one, but know that if anybody slips a little bit, if there are any dumb penalties or anything, you can insert a guy like Matt Cook or Ryan Carter or even Sean Bergenheim, who didn't open well with the Wild, his time with the Wild, but when he got in on, you know, in that game on Thursday in Nashville, he had four shots for the Wild, and I thought played a very good game.
I agree with you. I thought Bergenheim played his best game in a Wild uniform to date on Thursday against the Nashville Predators, no question. One of the things you touched on was the veteran leadership, and then how about the youth? He had a couple milestones that were reached on Thursday. It was Jason Zucker's 20th of the season, Mikko Koivu with his 500th career point, and Mike Yeo talked about both of those players and the importance of those milestones.
First off, Zuck getting 20 goals, coming back when he, you know, coming back early and getting three goals in his last two games, and getting over the 20 mark, I think, is really big. I think you got to tip your hat to Mikko now getting 500 points. That's an amazing accomplishment, and I thought he was great all night too. So I was happy to see he got rewarded.
You know, on Mikko Koivu, the Detroit game, it was very clear he was not in the lineup, and you know, Chad, I go through this all the time. I think I'm probably his biggest supporter, promoter, and fan in this market, period.
I would not be surprised if you were. And I think that, you know, as you mentioned, when he was not in the lineup, it just showed how necessary he is and how important, you know, having a two-way center is. And not that the Wild don't have other two-way centers, but they don't have a two-way center as good as Mikko Koivu. And Mikael Granlund gets, you know, the flashy stuff, and people see his playmaking ability and all the skill that he has. But Mikko Koivu, again and again throughout his whole career, has been underrated. And frankly, even this season, as he gets older, I think that he's almost even more underrated, which usually isn't the way that it works for a player like that.
No doubt. There's a bigness to his game. There's face-off wins, which are, he typically wins on most nights his face-off duels, which is critical, as we know, to possession. He's great in his own zone. He's great in the offensive zone. But more importantly, there's an attitude, and he's sort of like, it's like dad. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And one player I'll make a parallel to, and I'm just going to get laughed off the map, and I don't really care, because they are different players, but the style of play that this second player I'm going to allude to really evolved into what Mikko Koivu does. But because he was so flashy and sexy in the early part of his career, everybody thinks he was just this offensive phenom. Granted, he is United States all-time leading point getter in the National Hockey League in Mike Modano, but he went from, you know, aspiring to 100 points in the 93 plateau that he had in 1993 down to about an 80-point guy when 100 was still a vogue number to get. 80, 70-point guy, you know, Koivu, a 50, 60-point guy in the new NHL, I think is really their games are similar. Modano's evolved to what Koivu's is today, but Koivu's not flashy, and I think that's what people forget. You don't need flash in the postseason, and this team needs to play the way they do, keep it simple, and stick to their system.
Absolutely. You had me nervous there when you're talking about the description. I'm trying to think of who you could be talking about.
I was going to ask you.
I was waiting and waiting, and finally you dropped the clue with the U.S.'s all-time leading scorer.
Well, there's a transformation in his game. He finally took the advice from Bob Gainey. I know this is a very specific part of his career, and he's very grateful that he listened and that he applied, and it became a big difference to how he extended his career and maybe a Stanley Cup in his world, and that's very vital part. It's just a very important thing. And, you know, the other thing that I think is really important about what happened, Chad, is 100 points for this team, a chance to pick up 102 tonight. I believe that's, what, a franchise record with 102 then if they get that tonight?
I believe so.
So, wow, how about that? You know, 6 playoff appearances, 3 straight in franchise history. That's pretty good. I mean, among their expansion cousins, I don't think anybody can boast what the Minnesota Wild have done. But Mike Yeo did talk about the 100 points. And you could, I know you were there. I'm going to get your take after this soundbite. You could feel the pride in him saying he had a 100-point team.
You know, I think it's a really cool thing that we tied it. You know, and I think, you know, I know it doesn't sound like much, and it's only 2 points, but I think there's a big difference between 98 and 100 points. When you get over the 100 point plateau, I think that's a mark of a really good hockey team, and so that meant something to us. But I think it would be something special for sure.
He was pretty proud, wasn't he?
Absolutely, we were going down there, and you know, so much stuff happened in that game that I've got my notebook as I'm walking toward the locker room. I'm trying to write down all the different storylines and Miko's 500th and Zucker's 20th and the other young guys stepping up and Darcy Kuemper coming back and playing well and a third straight win in Nashville and what all this means. And I kind of forgot that, holy smokes, you take a step back. That's a 100-point season until he said it. And definitely very proud of that. And the other thing that he alluded to, which, because they won that game, now it's set up for today's game. But the Wild have won 12 straight games on the road. That ties the NHL record set by the 2005-2006 Detroit Red Wings. That ties the NHL record for longest road winning streak. 12 games in a row. They can go for number 13 in game number 82 this afternoon in a 2 p.m. start here in St. Louis.
That's just absolutely incredible when you think about that. I mean, there's the Detroit Red Wings. Did they win the cup or did they lose that year? I can't remember. They might have had a cup in there, but I mean, this is Stanley Cup type play, and what you need to do to win in the postseason is to win in all venues and all situations, and not be a home team. And you know, I've been harping on that pretty much all year long, and play the game the way they want to. From the sense of the Nashville Predators after that Wild win, they couldn't be feeling too good about themselves by blowing the 2-0 lead, and things have been a little bit dicey for them over the past 2-3 weeks.
Well, they certainly have, and they lost 3 straight games at home, and I think, you know, just to go back to the road success, that's what's going to be so important for them, because even though they're a 100-point team, even though they've done so many good things, this is a Wild team that's going to open the playoffs on the road. And last season, you know, so they played 13 playoff games. 7 of them were on the road. They had just 1 win on the road. And granted, it was an absolutely monster game. It was game 7 in Colorado. It was the game that won them their first playoff series in a decade. So I don't want to marginalize what that 1 win was. But at the same time, you know, this Wild team, I think, certainly expects to win more than 1 game. And while they were, you know, last season was funny, especially in the postseason, because the Wild were so dominant at home, but they just didn't have much road success outside of Game 7. And this season, I think one of the noticeable differences as we continue to look at the things that have changed since last postseason, one of them is that the Wild can go into just about any city now, even St. Louis, which for so long has given them trouble, and feel like they can play a good game and win a game on the road.
Well, and, you know, Jason Zucker talked about how big this win was, and I want to parlay that in a minute after this comment.
We had a lot of different line combinations, guys that hadn't played. So I think there's a little bit of an adjustment in the first period, but Kemp's played great. Our D-core, they played great. And as far as the forwards, there's a bit of adjustment there. But we just had to battle back, and the guys did that tonight.
What he talked about was adjustments. And what I think we've learned with this roster now and with the additions of Chris Stewart, who I think has been absolutely huge up front, pardon the pun. You have Bergenheim lurking. You have Cook. You have Brodziak, who's been outstanding. Chad, I mean, you've got the ability to play different versions of the game, I think, depending upon what's put before you. If you want to run and skate, you can do that. I think that's changed and evolved with this team over the past year and a half or so. It used to be the teams were building to be Pittsburgh, Boston, Chicago. Now they're, you know, it's to be more flexible.
Well, and that's, you know, what's going to be big, because when you look at, and we'll break all of this down later in the show, but when you look at who the Wild could be playing in the playoffs, it's Nashville, which is a very speedy, tries to play a puck possession, get the puck up the ice type of game. But then it's also St. Louis and Anaheim, which are big bodies, and they're going to try to play a physical game. And what all of this depth does is, you know, depending on the playoff opponent, you can sort of change your lineup a little bit, and, you know, not that you want to lose your identity, but you can play a different game based on your opponent now.
That is huge. And speaking of opponents, you know, one of the opponents the Wild could have are the St. Louis Blues in the first round of the playoff, their opponent today. We're going to have Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joining us around the bend. We take a timeout when we come back. More on the ice.
One-timer here. Harper will save. Goes back, but Berglund able to get it to Petrangelo. A little head fake. Now he lets it go. Rebound. Go! Yes, kid. On the power play. But meanwhile, here come the Blues. On man break. A chance for Schwartz. Hits it off. Scores. 2-0. Score St. Louis 2, Chicago 1.
I always love the call by Dave Strader there on the NBC Sports Network. That guy is outstanding. And that's the St. Louis Blues 2-1 win over the Chicago Blackhawks the other night. They are queuing it up to take on the Minnesota Wild today at 2 p.m. in the final game, the final day of the National Hockey League season in 2015. And Chad Graff, who would have thought that the season would feel like it would? I feel like I've been through hell and back.
Especially from the Wild.
That's what I mean.
81 games, more than 6 months. 3 months ago, we were talking about, you know, whether they should fall apart and try to, you know, get a better chance at one of the two top prospects coming out. And here we are with one game for the Wild against St. Louis today and three possible playoff opponents.
Yeah, we were on the verge of full torpedo at one juncture, which was absolutely fair. But, wow, what's gone on here has been quite impressive. And we have on the line now with us Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Good Saturday morning to you, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us today.
Good Saturday morning to you, too, Pete and Chad. How you guys doing?
Awesome. I mean, I don't know about you. I was telling Chad I'm not a big weather talker, but I couldn't help but talk about it today. It is perfect here. So maybe if we have a playoff series, you can enjoy some of this great April weather up here.
Yeah. No, welcome. Hopefully it'll be a good game, too.
So give me your thoughts on this Blues team. You know, 107 points on the season, the 50-win campaign. You've got a pair of goaltenders that I think are obviously 1A, 1B, and just depth up and down that lineup. How good has it been from your perspective all year long?
Well, I think pretty good, guys, but I think it's been quite an adjustment all year. I know maybe from the outside it doesn't look like that with the St. Louis Blues, because they've been a pretty good team for 3 or 4 years now. This is the fourth straight season they'll go to the playoffs under Ken Hitchcock. But when they got knocked out in the first round last year to the Chicago Blackhawks, they decided to make some changes, and they sent a physical defenseman, Roman Polak, to the Toronto Maple Leafs for more of a guy who was a puck mover in Carl Gunnarsson. And also they brought in Paul Stastny. They needed some more skill up front. They didn't have it. They didn't have the likes to compete with the Chicago Blackhawks. They also brought in a guy, Yuri Laterra. And so what it did is it changed the way that they played the game from a grind it out, you know, we're going to be physical, we're going to hit, and it changed it to more of a little bit of east-west, I got to tell you. And the Blues struggled with that for the first few months of the season. It was only midway through, or maybe three quarters of the way through the season, before they were able to kind of find an identity and play that way a little bit. But our success is still going to be based on the way we've played the past few years, and that's being good on the forecheck and checking for chances. And so this last little bit, they've been out without a couple of their top players, Alexander Steen and Vladimir Tarasenko, but they've played very well, and they seem to be rolling at the right time.
Sure, because of those changes and because they haven't had a ton of playoff success in recent memory, is there a lot of pressure on them, you know, as the Central Division champs, possibly as the number one seed in the Western Conference, to not only win a playoff series, but to make a little bit of a run?
An absolute ton of pressure, Chad, and I know that's the case in all the cities. I do realize that. But listen, the Blues go back to 2006, Eric Johnson, the first overall pick, and from that day on, the franchise said, we're going to grow with these guys, and we're going to build, and we're going to do it the right way, and you got to follow us. And so finally, several years later, they make the playoffs, and they get bounced in the first round. And then they lose four straight to L.A., and then last year, after getting up 2-0 on Chicago, they lose four straight to Chicago. So the people, the fans, have stuck with it, you know, for many years now, and they heard that, okay, you got to go to the playoffs, you got to get through a round, you got to take your lumps, and they've heard that message, but now they're ready to get to the third round, to play in the Stanley Cup Finals. This Blues team has been picked by many national experts the past few years to be that dark horse to win the Stanley Cup, or at least play in the finals, and they haven't come anywhere close. So I think there's a lot of pressure on this team going into this year's playoffs.
Boy, Jeremy, that's a great point. Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joining us here on the Ice Radio Show on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. And I was one of those people last year that picked the Blues to win the Cup. I didn't even see them as a dark horse. And I'm so intrigued by how teams have been built. And for such a long time, Minnesota had worked so long, you know, I felt, to get faster, speedier, quicker, to go after their nemesis, the Chicago Blackhawks, or, you know, down the road, Pittsburgh. Of course, you know, Chuck Fletcher from that mold as well. And it's really evolved into becoming a little bit more of a heavy team. They still are trying to maintain styles of play, and I think they're doing it. Do you feel as though St. Louis can, I mean, have they become one or the other, or are the Blues going to be capable of going both ways like that as well?
Yeah, I think they're both, because I still think they have the guys in the lineup that will hit you, a David Backes, a Steve Ott, a Ryan Reeves, so they can certainly play that style of game, and to be honest, that's when they're best. When they're having the drop back passes and trying to go east-west all the time, because there have been nights when we've seen it, it's not good. But they have to have that kind of talent to be able to compete with, you know, the Patrick Kanes or with some of your guys, with the Zach Parises and so on and so forth. So I think that the Blues just have to find that balance. And, you know, fortunately for the Blues, the schedule is 82 games long, because it nearly took them that long to figure out, okay, how are we going to play? But here's the other thing. Paul Stastny, you pay $28 million 4 years for one of the biggest free agents last summer. And the first half of the season, he was still taking some time to get used to the new surroundings, play with some different guys, try to find his feel. But because of the injuries to Tarasenko and Steen, that's allowed him to play with a group, Jaden Schwartz and TJ Oshie, and find some success. And maybe that's a line that the Blues are going to carry into the playoffs. So I think they can find that balance, to answer your question. Some nights it's there. It's not always there. It's just hoping that they get on the same page.
Just like the Minnesota Wild, the St. Louis Blues could play any number of teams, and we'll find out later today who they get. But it's sort of amazing that they could still play Chicago, which would be a heck of a first-round series. They could play, and probably I would say this is the most likely scenario, is a St. Louis Blues-Minnesota Wild matchup. But they could also get the Winnipeg Jets, too, who are a big, scary team, as Pete and I were talking about. So who do you think the St. Louis Blues match up well against, or how do you think they're looking at the three different teams they could play in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's a great question. And then to throw the other variable into it, Chad, is the fact that, you know, which lineup are we going to see with the St. Louis Blues today and perhaps the Minnesota Wild as well? I don't know if you guys have some clues on who Mike Yeo is going to dress, but Ken Hitchcock saying yesterday that while Alexander Steen and Vladimir Tarasenko will be back in the lineup after missing 2 weeks with their lower body injuries, he's going to sit some other guys. And to be honest with you, I don't know who those guys are going to be. There are some guys who have been dealing with nagging injuries, and he's going to elect to sit, he said, quote, 5 to 6 of them today. So you might not see the Blues' full lineup. So,
oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. So in terms of who are they going to play, we don't know yet. Same thing with you guys. Three different teams. Could be Winnipeg, could be Chicago, and it could be the Minnesota Wild. And who do they match up best against? You know, I think obviously all three of those series are going to be tough. There's a lot of people in St. Louis. I don't know how the fans have responded in Minnesota, but there's a lot of people in St. Louis who feel that maybe now is the time to play the Chicago Blackhawks without Patrick Kane. And I know he's back on the ice and it's looking like he's making some progress, but he's not ready. And he probably won't be back in full stride to the second round. So do you want to play the Chicago Blackhawks right now? That might be the best fit for the St. Louis Blues. They've done very well. Two wins against the Blackhawks in the last 6 days. But as far as the Wild, the Blues and Wild have had tremendous battles this season, and I think the Wild would give the Blues a very tough time, as would the Winnipeg Jets. I haven't focused on the Wild-Jets games this season. You guys would know the answer to that. But I know that the Jets have given the Blues fits. They're fast, they're physical, their defense is really good. So I think that would be a tough matchup for the Blues, too.
You know, the Winnipeg Jets are definitely a Paul Maurice club, and they play like it. And they've made the appropriate moves to get even better this season, and their goaltending has been really, really good. I was asked on a show on here on The Ticket earlier in the week who my favorite in the West would be, and you couldn't pick the Minnesota Wild, and I said the Winnipeg Jets, just a team that I would not want to see in the first round. I agree with you 100%. We're speaking with Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about the Chicago Blackhawks being vulnerable right now. I think this is if I'm anybody, that's probably, other than any of the Pacific Division teams, your most favorable matchup of the Central Division teams, in my opinion. But, you never know. And you know a team's in trouble when a guy is skating with no equipment on, or like an orange or red jersey or whatever, and there's hope. Oh, boy. You know, I mean, that's still 2 months away. When I saw that story come out, I was like, are we reaching here? I mean, are we, is this the Wizard of Oz? What's going on? So, I agree. A question for you, is it from this perspective, Ken Hitchcock, a Stanley Cup champion coach, has been there for what? Is it four seasons, you said, Jeremy?
Yeah.
At some point, when can you fall back on that experience of his? And then at the other point, do you feel like you're sort of running into a brick wall with the results?
Well, it's a fair question, and it's a question that's being asked here in St. Louis. I'll say this. The Blues are famous for one thing. They kicked Scotty Bowman out of town. They said that Al Arbor would never be a head coach. They fired Joel Quenneville. So the list goes on and on of coaches they've let go who've gone on to greater success. Obviously, Ken Hitchcock is in the twilight. They're not going to let him go, and he goes to win a couple cups elsewhere, I don't think, anyway. Mm-hmm. But he's a coach who's had a lot of success with this organization. The Blues have been one of the top five teams in the league in the regular season the past 4 years. And not only that, but as I mentioned, they've made the playoffs. They haven't had the playoff success. And as you guys know, it's tough. It's very, very tough to win in the playoffs. You have to have the right pieces, and everything has to come together. There are some people in St. Louis, albeit probably the minority, who feel that if the Blues don't go a few rounds in the playoffs, that, you know, would the team say bye to Ken Hitchcock? I honestly don't think that that's a fair evaluation, a fair assessment, because he has done so much for this club. But at some point, you have to say, how are we going to get it done? Is it with Ken Hitchcock, or is it with someone else? These players, this core group, the David Backuses, the TJ Oshies, Patrick Berglunds, they're on their fourth coach. And so I think the Blues have to put it on the players to get it done in the playoffs. Obviously, Ken Hitchcock's a big part of it. He's got to make the adjustments in-game, get the team ready. But I don't think he's the problem. And I know from the outside, hey, can they get farther with Ken Hitchcock? That is a big question. But here in St. Louis, a lot of that pressure is on the players.
Well, and there is lineage or a familiarity between he and, of course, Doug Armstrong, the general manager. So, that was a very entertaining and enjoyable first segment with you there, Jeremy. If you're available to join us during the playoffs, if these two teams meet, it would be great to have you on board, if you wouldn't mind joining us.
That would be great. No, I appreciate it, Pete and Chad. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. That was Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And when we come back, we're going to have a look at the NHL awards. Who are the MVP of the Hart Trophies? How about the Jack Adams, Calder, Norris? All that and more coming up on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. The this show is just gelling right here. A little collective soul to get your morning going. By the way, a great live show they did in Atlanta with their youth symphony orchestra probably, what, 10 years ago? Maybe. Oh, it was unbelievable. It was very good stuff. So, had to open up this segment because we're going to bring in our good friend Bart Archer for a brief moment here before we get into our NHL awards ceremonies or pre-award ceremonies with Chad Graff. Bart has something on the line that he's doing this weekend. It's a benefit charity hockey game, which is very near and dear to my heart. It's going to benefit Alzheimer's disease, which my mother has right now, my grandmother. It's, you know, we all know people that have had it. And I'm telling you, you want to talk about one of the most debilitating diseases I've ever seen. It's one I don't think we as a society should turn our back on anymore. Good morning to you, Bart Archer.
Good morning, Pete. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about this game you got.
Well, it's called Face Off Against Alzheimer's. It was put together by Lenny Chicharas down at Bloomington Hyundai. It's an NHL alum versus Bloomington Hyundai, really the Luther Auto Group. And on April 18th at 5:15 to 7 o'clock, we're going to have a game, and the proceeds definitely go directly to the Alzheimer's Association so they can hopefully further the advancement of research and find an end to this debilitating disease.
So this is an NHL alumni game, correct? Do you know what kind of players are going to be there?
Well, yeah, every time I read the list, I get a little bit more nervous, Pete. But
I can hear it in your voice.
The 1980 Olympic team, Mike Crowley, former Bloomington Jefferson, University of Minnesota standout, has a little bit of a home ice advantage on this one. Eric Westrom's coming out, Lance Pitlick, Chris McAlpin, Steve Jensen, former North Star, Brad Maxwell, I'm excited.
Maxie.
And one of my personal favorites, a hero of mine growing up, Craig Norwich. I'm not much younger than him, but he was definitely one of my favorite players growing up. Ben Hankinson and Bob Bergloff, and Carl Wetzel is going to be there. Those are the names that I'm familiar with now, but hopefully we'll get some more.
Is Carl Wetzel putting the pads on to be the goalie?
I think so. But former Detroit Red Wing and obviously a Minnesota North Star coach as well. But looking forward to seeing all these guys. I'm just looking forward to a great event.
If he's playing goalie, go five hole.
I just want to get it on net.
What can people do to contribute and be a part of this?
Well, tickets are very reasonable. Adult tickets are $10. Senior and students basically from 12 to 18 are $5. But kids under 12, kids under 18 with a youth hockey jersey or a valid military ID, all those three get in for free. There is a post-game meet and greet at the Bloomington Hilton, which I'm kind of excited about. That's $20. But if you bring a 12-year-old or under, they get in free with that paid admission. But if you want to do both the game and the post-game party, they cut it down to $25. So very reasonable. All the proceeds go to the Alzheimer's Association. It's a great cause, and I'm very honored and privileged to be a part of it.
Truth is, it's a great opportunity to see some of the old former pro players, get up close to them, get some autographs, see some hockey, and really benefit what I think is an absolutely critical thing in our world. And if I had more time to get involved, I would have. I just learned of it from you this week. I would certainly like to be more involved next year some way, somehow, at least from a promotional perspective. And I will say this, Bart, I'd like to have you on next week for one more reminder call. Okay?
I'd be honored to do that. And my father suffered from Alzheimer's and perished in 2007, so it hits close to home for me. But I'll be playing for your mom and my mom and all the other people that are being afflicted by this terrible disease.
Really, really appreciate that, Bart Archer. And I'll be firing off a couple of tickets for sure, too, to be involved. So,
well, appreciate it. It's always been supportive. Great show, Pete. And I'll look forward to being with you next week, sir.
All right, buddy. Take care. That was Bart Archer. He has the big game at the Bloomington Ice Garden from 5 to 7 p.m. on the 18th of April. That's to raise money for Alzheimer's disease. Personally, to everybody in that group, thank you very much. And for all those who have loved ones that deal with that affliction, I'm sure it's appreciated as well. Let's get on now with the NHL awards. Chad Graff, you still with me?
I am still with you.
Hart Trophy, most valuable player of the National Hockey League. At this stage, it's, you know, pretty much you don't, you know, we have a Conn Smythe Trophy for the playoffs. So going into the last day, who is your Hart Trophy winner?
Well, I'm still going back and forth. It's done three players for me. This is one of those ones that are voted by the media. So
uh-oh.
I've been going back and forth, but I think right now I have Alex Ovechkin one, and right now I still have to decide whether Carey Price is two for me or whether Devin Dubnyk is two for me.
Okay. My number one is Alexander Ovechkin, and you said his name first, right?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, so obviously he's front and center. You know what? He's got 52 goals, 80 points in an era where 80 points is equivalent to 120 from 30 years ago. But what I really think is, you know, what I like is the Caps are have 101 points. They're dialed in. He's a physical leader of his team, but he also has skill. I say without him, they do not make the playoffs.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
More than anything.
He missed one game this season, and it was a game against the Wild that the Wild won, and they looked off kilter. And I think the big reason, in my opinion, to vote for Ovechkin, and believe me, I get how big Dubnyk has been. I get how big Carey Price has been and how good he's been. But Ovechkin has bought into a new system under Barry Trotz. He's playing more of a responsible game. And he hasn't lost his outstanding offensive ability in doing it, so that's the reason for me for going that with Ovechkin.
I agree. And because of it, his buy-in has made that entire team better, and now, in my opinion, an Eastern Conference championship contender. Legit. I have John Tavares as my number two. How about that?
He was gaining steam of late, I know, in that race.
Well, he's 84 points, and I think without the captain and his league-leading 84 points, the Islanders would be on the outside looking in the postseason picture. With him, though, they're third in the Metropolitan Division. They have 100 points, just like the Wild, with one game left. He has 8 game-winning goals, too, with 13 power plays. Makes other guys around him better. So I have him as number two. My number three is Carey Price. I mean, you know, you go to him, but then you've got we'll get into the Norris Trophy in a bit, but you have him. I mean, you have to make the argument. 43 win season, 1.95 goals against average, and a 934. But they have a Cy Young Award winner in baseball for pitchers, and I think you have the Vezina for goalies. So that's why I kind of wrestle with he and Dubnyk. I have Dubnyk as obviously an honorable mention of my top three, and then I have another dark horse just for discussion's sake. You ready for this one?
Fire away.
Jiří Hudler.
Really? Wow.
31-goal campaign. That, for him, how about this, is 19 more points going into his last game than his best year in 2008-2009 in Detroit. With that said, he's a plus 17. He's got 5 game winners, and he, with Johnny Hockey, in my opinion, have propelled the Calgary Flames to the postseason for the first time in 5 years.
They've been outstanding. They've been fun to watch.
Once again, I say without Jiří Hudler, they don't make the postseason. So that's why I put him there.
Huh, well, you definitely got me with a dark horse. I thought for sure I knew what your top five would be, at least the top four.
I thought I'd just go with a little hanging curveball with you for the baseball season. Let's get to the fun one here. The Calder winner. Who do you like? There are so many guys for Rookie of the Year potential here.
It's amazing. This one, I think, is just as good and deep as any of them, but I'm going with, and there are a ton of different guys, so I'm excited to hear who you've got. But my number one right now is Aaron Ekblad from the Florida Panthers. He's a young defensive line. And then he's also chipped in offensively, 12 goals, 26 assists. He's a plus 11 on a Florida Panthers team that isn't going to make the playoffs. And he's 19 years old. The guy was born in 1996. And so he's my Calder guy.
Well, the one thing about Ekblad, which I like, he's on my list. What I like is you compare his numbers with Ryan Suter. He has 38 points. Suter has 38 points. And think about the value that Ryan Suter has for the Minnesota Wild and all the things he does. This kid's a plus 11. He is the 19-year-old. The number one overall pick from last year is making Dave Talon look quite solid down there in Florida. You know, you're going to like I've got him down my list just a little. I've got a 1A and a 1B. 1A, Johnny Hockey. I mean, I know it's a sexy, trendy pick, but that guy's just been explosive.
Most points of any rookie.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, to me, and he's a plus 11. He's got 4 game winners, 8 power plays, you know, the whole deal. You know, they improved from 77 points last year to 97 this year. That's a massive, or 99 if they win today. And they haven't been in the postseason since 08-09. And I go back to he and Hudler, and Giordano before he got hurt, being the key factors to that team's. I think that's, you know, the Wild story's been so great, you know, and it's been the great local story. But I think the execution of the Calgary Flames, given all sorts of adversity, has been amazing this year.
Well, and we'll touch on the Norris soon, I'm sure, but Giordano was a front runner for the Norris, and he's been hurt the last 15 games or so. And I think what's hurt his case, aside from being hurt, is that the Calgary Flames haven't missed a beat without their best defenseman.
What does that tell you? I guess he's not that important. No. Here's another one I have for you. Mark Stone of the Ottawa Senators.
He is my number three behind Gaudreau and Ekblad. Stone, from everything it's tough when you don't get to see guys from the Eastern Conference a ton. But 24 goals, 38 assists, and everybody I talked to out there is very high on Mark Stone.
Mr. Clutch, he has 17 points in the last 13 games dating back to March 17th. The Sens are 9-3-1, and guess what? In control of a postseason berth. I credit him, a couple of other rookies they have, a couple other honorable mentions, John Klingberg from Dallas. If you mention Ekblad, you got to mention that guy. And what about Jake Allen in St. Louis? Very good.
Another one, and here's another one for you. Anders Lee, I don't think that he'll win it, but he's a guy that will get some consideration. The Edina guy playing on my island.
Our local tie will get more. Let's pick up this discussion, look ahead at the Wild game and the potential playoff matchups around the bend on the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. It's a long way to the top if you want to be a... Well, Norris Trophy winner. How about that? Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, on the Ice Radio Show. If you think we're missing the boat on MVPs and anything else like that, give us a call. 651-989-9105. We'd love to hear what you guys are thinking as far as who your MVPs, your Vezina trophies, and whatnot. Norris Trophy, to me, it's one guy, PK Subban right now.
Really? I've got Erik Karlsson. Subban will definitely get lots of love and consideration, but every time I see Karlsson, it's just so dominant.
I agree. The guy is an absolute, I'm going to say this, offensive machine. You know why I like Subban?
Why?
Because he's got points. He's got plus 19. He has 21 power play points. He's just, but you know, Carlson's got 30. I get that. You know what? 1A, 1B for me. I'm saying Subban because he's a little more physical too.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like those two.
Brent Burns, is he a D or forward? I mean, I've seen him, but what's the deal?
He's been back and forth for almost all of his tenure with San Jose. But he has been a defenseman all season, and he could get some love.
But it's really a two-horse race. It's Carlson, yeah. Subban, right?
Yep.
Okay. Jack Adams Award. Bob Hartley is my guy, Calgary Flames.
I like that pick. It's kind of funny, though, when you think about how silly this award can be, especially with how it can be voted and GMs have a say in this one. And last year, Patrick Waugh wins this award. And I think the very first time I met you over the summer, you brought up how sort of flawed that was. And sure enough, this season, we don't have to... look too far to see what has happened to the Colorado Avalanche. They will be missing the playoffs this season after their great season last season. So who knows with this award, but I like your pick. I also like Dave Cameron with Ottawa. He jumped in late, but they've been outstanding with him.
Well, so I started going through my list of guys, and it's a mile long. Dave Cameron is absolutely on my list. I've got, who do we have here? Oh, on the Patrick Waugh thing, just to take a shot, we did correctly predict that implosion at the State Fair appearance. I mean, yeah. You can't get this stuff anywhere else in this market, but right here on the Ice Radio, by the way. But I had Peter LaViolette, but with the latest, I don't want to say meltdown, but not good there. Barry Trotz, Washington Capitals, a guy can coach. He expects things out of his team, and he gets them. Mike Yeo has to be discussed. I mean, there are a lot of things that were out of his control, and he had a nice gift and a great goaltender that's worked out on a shrewd trade there, a couple of moves there by the upper management. But Mike Yeo should be considered.
I think he'll get some consideration, as will Alain Vigneault with the New York Rangers, the President's Trophy winning in New York Rangers.
How about my boy Gerard Gallant at Florida?
If they made the playoffs.
They're close. One more year, and he's got him there. Jack Capuano, I have him on list. Vigneault, Paul Maurice, he has to be considered in Winnipeg, the work he's done there. I mean, there's a lot of high-caliber candidates for that award.
Yes, there are. I like your number one, though, Bob Hartley. I like Hartley and Trotz are my two guys.
Both class acts and great professional hockey coaches. The goaltender, Vezina, Price, and Dubnyk, pick them.
Yeah, well, it's going back and forth. This is the one that I think most Wild fans are going to be interested to see how it shapes up. I think that Carey Price will win the Vezina, but you know, you certainly have to look at what Dubnyk has done. The big knock on Dubnyk is that he hasn't played as many games as Carey Price. But other than that, the numbers, Dubnyk has done it, you know, every game down the stretch. He's played in back-to-backs. He's played in 3 and 4 nights. He's done it all. But at the end of the day, I think it's Price 1, Dubnyk 2, Pekka-Rinne probably 3.
Pekka. Yeah. That's pretty much, I mean, everybody had Rinne and Price probably in their discussion point, but somewhere, about mid-January, that all changed with the play of Devan Dubnyk. So we move ahead now. The Wild play the St. Louis Blues, and, you know, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch sounded, I don't want to say cautious or trepidatious, but he didn't seem, he was very we'll see-ish. How's that?
In terms of
his club,
Blues-Minnesota Wild matchup?
Just his club against anybody, Minnesota and Winnipeg, and wanting the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, to me, that sounds like you're not feeling that great about which way this thing could go.
Well, there is so much pressure just from, you know, being in St. Louis and reading the paper, watching the news, and hearing from their fans. There is so much pressure on this Blues team to not have another early exit, to at least win one play. I mean, this is a team that could win the Western Conference, and the expectations here are just please do not collapse. Please do not lose early. So there's a ton riding on this for the St. Louis Blues. And right now, as we look at it, the St. Louis Blues are the team that the Minnesota Wild are most likely to play in the playoffs. So they could also play Anaheim. They could also play Nashville. And the crazy thing in all of this is, so the Wild play at 2 p.m., after the game, they're going to board their plane. They're going to fly home. The Wild are going to land in Minnesota around 8 p.m. They're going to be in Minnesota landing after having played their whole season, still not knowing who they're playing, watching Chicago play at 8 p.m. and watching Anaheim play at 8
p.m. Can you imagine that? I mean,
isn't that crazy?
If you're the schedule makers, if you're Gary Bettman in the National Hockey League, this race has just been absolutely riveting for both conferences. You know, when you look over into the Eastern Conference, you could have Boston out of this thing, and you could have Pittsburgh out of this thing. Ottawa could be jumping. That's incredible. What a story of a final day over there.
All around, there are so many good storylines, including the fact that 5 of the 6 Canadian teams could make the playoffs. Everybody but low Toronto.
They're rejoicing north of the border. I mean, the great part is when the Canadian teams make it, I think sometimes their fans actually think it's representative that all the Finns and the Swedes really represent them. I'm just saying.
Right.
But the bigger picture is Chicago today goes and takes on the Colorado Avalanche in Colorado. Probably a team the Avs want to finish with an uptick. You know, a lot of teams in their position do. Chicago is playing a little more of a cautious game, I would say, at this stage. Very strong possibility that Chicago team could lose. Sounds to me like the Blues are resting 4 or 5 players. And I said in the middle of Jeremy's statement, Chad, I went, uh-oh. And what that meant was that means the Wild could let up, you know, pull off the gas like they're known to do in certain situations.
Okay.
And I do think a Wild-Nashville matchup is possibly the most favorable. I would not have said that earlier in the year.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, but I'll say this. Chicago does not want any part of St. Louis. Chicago would much rather play Nashville. They've done it in the past. They've seen, you know, they just don't seem to, even when they beat St. Louis, they leave games against St. Louis beat up. They just don't seem to match up well against them. So I think Chicago is going to do everything in their power to avoid playing St. Louis. So, I kind of feel it'll be something like 60% chance the Wild play St. Louis, maybe 25 that they play Anaheim, and then just 15 that they play Nashville. So we'll see. And it's crazy that we won't know until very late tonight.
And then in the Western Conference, the difference between the number one seed and the number 8 seed could be maybe about 4 games in points, 4 or 5 games. That's it.
Been so much parity, and I think it goes to show you know, in some years teams are really jockeying for that final position to make sure that they get one of those two wildcard teams. This season, you know, the matchups are what they are, but it's not like, you know, teams are going to be rejoicing to play one of the two wildcard teams. You're talking about two outstanding wildcard teams in the Western Conference. Teams don't want to play Minnesota because of the outstanding run that they've been on since January 15th. And they don't want to play Winnipeg because Winnipeg is sort of a team that, to me, is very similar to St. Louis. They have some skill, but in a playoff series, they are going to beat you up. They're going to wear you down. You're not going to come out of a playoff series with the Winnipeg Jets without some bumps and bruises. So I think that both of these wildcard teams present for some very tough matchups and some definite possible upsets.
Winnipeg, of course, the loudest building in the league. Usually we can project what the threshold would be for teams to make the playoffs and being the final seed, and usually it's 94, 95 points. The play of the Central Division, St. Louis 107, Nashville 104, Chicago 102, Minnesota 100, this going into the last game, last day, obviously, and Winnipeg now embarking on 99 points if they win today. Los Angeles, if they win their last game today, they could finish with 95 points, which typically would have allowed them to do their usual thing, which is just nibble their way in and then start beating everybody. But because of the play of the Central Division being so high and forcing the stakes to go up even more, it has put the rest of the Western Conference in peril as far as trying to work their way into the playoffs. This is the highest bar I have ever seen of either division in this new format of playoff standings.
Even going back, you know, it's so clear how much better the Central Division is than anybody else, especially when you look at it in the sense going around all of these other divisions. Every other division has teams that other teams can go into and just count on wins. The Atlantic has Toronto and Buffalo. The Metropolitan has Carolina and New Jersey. The Pacific has Edmonton and Arizona. The worst teams in the Central Division are Colorado with 88 points and Dallas with 90 points. That is a very good division.
It is incredible. So, but you can't predict anything when the playoffs start. Teams that you think are shoo-ins necessarily aren't, and teams that are up and coming maybe not. They take you by surprise. The thing about Winnipeg, you know, we've mentioned them as a scary outfit. I'm just not sure if they have the depth at the end of the day to get much deeper than the first or second round.
I'm with you, but whoever plays them, even if they beat them, they're going to come out of there a little bit beat up, so it'll be interesting to see how a team recovers from playing a team like Anaheim or St. Louis or certainly Winnipeg.
They probably won't. Chad, what a show. Great talk. Enjoyed every moment with you. Jeremy Rutherford, Bart Archer joined us on this past hour. We must step aside. Enjoy your day. We'll see you soon and back on the air next week for two star-studded hours on the Ice Radio. David Helmer behind the controls. Have yourself a great day. We'll be back with more. It'll be On Deck Radio, but first, One and Done on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Signal strong. 105 The Ticket.